The average rate of return for companies in the defense market is lower than any other development or manufacturing space, and there are fewer and fewer incentives for companies to get into the market. Dan Garay is vice president at the Lexington Institute and writing about the defense market being more complicated and complex than ever and the implications of that. Dan, thanks for joining me today. You write there are more disincentives than incentives now for companies to get into the defense market. What are the disincentives that you see? Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure, Francis. Well, you know, the disincentives are, some of them are classic. You know, if you require a separate accounting system, you may require all kinds of classified operations. You have to account for costs and prices of parts. The program you're on that you've invested your own money and time and people in may get canceled in midstream at the convenience of the government. The Congress may decide to take money away from your program. All those are the classic ones that defense companies have been fighting for years. Now, on top of that, you have fewer and fewer new programs, and companies, you know, need programs. They need production, if you will, in order to generate revenues to do everything from invest in R&D to support their training programs, to keep their facilities alive, and all the rest. And then, in addition, the government is now putting such a squeeze on companies in terms of trying to get them to reduce costs that in a lot of cases, it's no longer worth the effort for companies to play.
How much of this is the structure of the acquisition system, and how much of it is it just fewer dollars in that system right now?
Well, you know, it's a mixture of both. I have to admit that with enough dollars, I suppose, you know, you can sort of paper over
right.
Any crime or any hole in the system. With enough procurement programs, everybody could sort of tolerate it. The problem now is that you've got a sclerotic, not very responsive system that adds cost and burdens both on the government side and the company side that take a lot of time to work through. So you have now increased requirements for everything from test and evaluation to product security to one other thing. And therefore, the ability to actually deploy capital and labor effectively continues to decline and does so regardless of sort of the level of spending.
You write about some concepts in this piece, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You write, one of the most important incentives and disincentives is predictability, and certainly I don't know if anybody can claim that in the past half decade or so we've had that in the defense acquisition market, Dan.
No, I mean, look, we haven't. And if you think about it, even companies that are engaged in very fast turnaround production cycles in the IT world, Apple and all the rest. I mean, some of them are even able to make their own predictability, if you want it, by putting out new products. But there is a certain predictability in the market, and while you may take some risk on demand, you're able to gauge it. But you can get all kinds of absolute affirmations up and down the system, service chiefs, secretaries of defense, presidents, that by God, we're going to do this or that program, and we're going to go through with it, and then the plug gets pulled. Real hard to run a business that way.
You write, the cycle times between the commercial and defense markets are entirely different. And you use an anecdote here that I think is interesting. The commercial developer of an ultralight combat vehicle now under consideration for acquisition by the Army put the difference this way. We change models every year. Imagine the headache you'd have with that. In a program of record, you'd just be buried by the change orders. Does that mean that the way that commercial companies do things is the way that the Pentagon should adopt them? Or does that mean that there's some kind of hybrid system that would give more flexibility to the military but give more predictability to the private sector is the answer?
Oh, well, that's the real core struggle now, since the DoD has to move to greater reliance on classic commercial companies. That's why Secretary Carter went out to Silicon Valley to sort of tell Silicon Valley that, you know, you are the people we really want. You are the companies we really want to do our business. But there's a huge problem with doing it that way, because the whole structure of the system, the time it takes to write requirements, to vet them, to validate them, to conduct a competition, it takes twice as long to conduct a competition as the cycle time for an ultralight vehicle, not to mention something like software, which can change every, you know, 6 months, maybe even less. So the only way we've gotten so far to do this is the middleman. We'll take a defense middleman. We'll take a major defense company that's all it does is that defense, and it will be the interface between the government on the one hand and that producer of the software or the ultralight vehicle or whatever. We haven't found a way of really making the system move even close to the pace of the commercial businesses.
You cite a case that has been examined on a number of different occasions in a number of different ways. General Dynamics mm-hmm. pulls out of the jet trainer competition. What's the significance of the comments the CEO made, and what's the commentary that we should take away from those comments vis-a-vis the broader acquisition market in the Defense Department?
She wasn't saying this bluntly, Phoebe Novakovic, but I think it's a real good point. She said, look, it's all about getting a decent rate of return. The problem is that these companies have a much more difficult time looking forward, seeing their way to a decent rate of return, particularly as they have to put more and more of their own capital and labor at risk. So you're seeing UTC, one of the companies that sponsors your show, going to spin off or sell off Sikorsky. Great company. The only reason they say they're doing it is the rate of return in that company isn't up to the level that they would really like to have. That's what they're all telling you now, that they are going to put business interests first. They've got to in order to survive. And in that context, the needs of the department may come second.
Bottom line of the case that you're making, and it's a convincing one, and we have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, is that the process is going in exactly the opposite direction that Secretary Carter and Secretary Kendall and their colleagues in the Defense Department say they would like to see the process go. They want to go bring more companies into the defense acquisition system rather than encourage them to go away, and yet the argument that you make is that the opposite is happening.
And it's, you can see it happening among companies or by companies that are traditional defense players. Imagine what that means for the Googles and the Apples and all the rest that don't traditionally work with the federal government, certainly not with defense, and have so much money and activity that why would they want to go through the pain and angst? That's the real danger.